Welcome to Talk is Jericho. It's the pod of thunder and rock and roll, and I've got a rock star today. Not the kind you're thinking of, though. This guy's a rock star behind the scenes of AEW. He's also Dustin Rhodes' tag team partner in the Natural Nightmares. I'm talking about QT Marshall. Don't say Marshall. He's making his Talk is Jericho debut. He asked me to do this show about 6 months ago, but I felt it was finally time after his amazing Bunkhouse Brawl match that he had just a few weeks ago in Dynamite, one of the best matches I've seen so far this year. You're going to hear his journey to AEW, which includes an almost detour through WWE. He was offered a tryout, and then it was taken away from him, ripped out of his hands, much like Luther in WCW. He's going to tell that story. He's talking about his wrestling school in Atlanta, how that came to be the place where AEW filmed 6 weeks of TV in a single day when the pandemic shutdown first happened at the end of March. QT's got stories about All In Chicago, meeting Cody, and how a trip for fun turned into a huge opportunity. You can hear about his time in Ring of Honor, the wrestlers who inspired him, some of his favorite matches. Here we go. It's QT Marshall right here on Talk is Jericho.
I mean, I guess we're just going to talk, right?
We're just going to talk, man. We even just started already.
Oh, wow.
So okay. I get the feeling this might be your first ever podcast.
My first podcast that actually means something.
All right. So here with QT Marshall.
Oh, man. Marshall.
And where did the Marshall come from?
On the indies, I needed a last name that people could identify with. And my mom at the time had purchased a jacket for me and mailed it to me from New Jersey. I was living in Florida. I said, I don't need a jacket. And then I said, all right, well, where is it from? She said, Marshall's. I said, oh, God. Well, I can only imagine. Because she always has to buy everything if it's on sale or if it's cheap.
Is Marshall's kind of like a...
It's like all the...
Kohl's or Michael's or something.
Like worse. You know what I mean? Worse.
TJ Maxx?
Like TJ Maxx, right. It's in the same family. And she said, but it's Marshall's. And then I said, oh, that's cool. If I have the ring announcer call me Marshall and I correct him, it's just easy, cheap heat.
Of course, so of course.
It's stuck. Now I don't care.
QT
now,
Marshall.
Yeah,
Marshall.
I would rather just be Mike, but it's QT Marshall.
But it's interesting because you mentioned months ago about doing this, doing my show, and I was always into it and thinking about it, but I wanted always wait until there's something that happens that really pops.
Sure, sure.
And last week you had the Bunkhouse match with Dustin and Butcher and Blade, and it was probably in my opinion the best match that I've seen you in. I mean, it was the most violent, but the most memorable.
Definitely a defining moment.
Yeah, defining. Now, tell me, why was it a defining moment for you?
So, just being partners with Dustin, there's a lot of nepotism and stuff that goes along with that, and being friends of Cody, and I always feel like I need to prove myself, even though I've been training and wrestling for 16 years. Mm-hmm. I don't really need to prove myself, but to certain fans, I feel like I always do, right? And I always have to justify why I'm here, even though I do a lot of stuff. But anyway,
a lot of stuff. We'll talk about that.
Yeah. But during this match, I thought about it. I said, okay, we always talk about live forever. What could I do that if I never wrestle again, that would live forever? And the night before, I was just at the building looking over stuff, as I do on the production side of things. And I saw a humongous ladder, and I was like, man, what if I jump off this ladder? not realizing that a ladder is probably not going to be in a bunkhouse, whatever. I was just like, what could I do off this ladder? And then I climbed up when no one was here. I just climbed up, and I looked down. I was like, so I literally yelled to one of the production guys. I was like, hide this ladder because this one is way too big. And
but that's one of those things. I'll say that when you're on the ground looking up, no problem.
No problem.
When you're up top looking down, you're like, holy shit.
And that's the thing is I would have had to jump off maybe the fourth rung down, and then you just look like a wuss.
Yeah,
you know what
exactly.
I mean? It's like, he doesn't want to go to the top. And so we got a little bit smaller. It was still 10 or 11 feet. And man, I'm still feeling it. Tony saw me yesterday as we were leaving after we were, talking business. And I was like, oh, I'll catch up. I'm just going to run to the restroom real quick. And I went to run, and I can't. So when I came back, he was like, yeah, you're not wrestling this week, right? And I was like, I don't know. What do you guys have planned? And he was like, yeah, no, you're not. I'm telling you, you're not. And I was like, okay, which is fine. I want to wrestle all the time, but I'm okay taking this week off.
Mm-hmm.
So especially with it being cold out tonight.
Yeah, so. But there's so much great stuff in that match. And like I said, the thing with Dustin that I love, and I've only worked with him maybe one time here, is he still has the same mentality that you just said. He still needs to, not prove, but every night he needs to show that he belongs. He needs to show that he's in the mix. He's very driven.
I've realized that as I team with him now, that for some reason, he doesn't believe that he's like.
That's right.
He's Dustin Rhodes.
Yes, exactly.
Even like when we talk about stuff and he's like, well, you think we should. I'm like, we should do whatever you want because yes. you're Dustin friggin' yes. Rhodes, dude. You can do whatever you want. Like, there's a hierarchy here in this company, I believe. Mm-hmm. And there's like five people and like he's one of them, you know? And well, he, for some reason, he doesn't, you know.
I think because he had, you know, he still has the mentality of being in WWE for so long where they didn't really. Respect him for his abilities. It's one of those things, like, it's one of the reasons why I came here. Like, if I was still there, we'd be slotted where we're slotted, and we come here and it's instant kind of top guy right. main event potential because of the experience
of
level.
Of course.
And also, too, I mean, Dustin's probably still in the best shape that he's ever been in.
It bothers me.
Yeah.
Like, I want to get a full bodysuit because it just bothers me that, like, my, you know, even my family is just like, so your partner, you know, he's a little older than you, but, like, he looks great.
Yeah.
And I'm like, yeah, Mom, I get it. Like, I'm working on it.
Right,
you know?
Right.
I always say, like, well, my character wouldn't be ripped. And my mom's like, you're just lazy.
That's
you know?
Always
like,
the way to hide behind
my
it.
My character
right?
doesn't yeah, need to be
my character.
Ripped.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Or have a full head of hair or whatever.
So let's talk about some of this stuff because, I mean, like I said, you had a great match. You've had great, good matches, very good matches, but this one was kind of the best one. But talk about kind of, I mean, there's so much to discuss, but talk about your journey to AEW. Because you do a lot of stuff here that people
yeah.
don't know about. I didn't even know about that you do.
So, okay. In a short bit, Cody brought me on as an assistant.
Had he seen you working somewhere?
So, I used to, like, I call it interning at Ring of Honor. I had opened a school, and I wanted to learn, because I thought I could never wrestle again, because the WWE told me like they weren't going to hire me because of my neck injury.
Mm.
So, I was like, shit, well, I don't know what else to do. Like, I'm good at running restaurants. Like, I can do something. I'm just not going to enjoy it for the rest of my life. So, long story short, I decided to open up this school with my wife in Georgia. And I started going to Ring of Honor shows because Kevin Kelly, I knew him really well. And he was a big fan of mine back when. And he was like, just do commentary for Women of Honor. That'll be the reason you're here. But while you're here, sit in the production meetings, like pay attention and learn as much as you can. Mm-hmm. And I was like, great, because even if I just run my own little tiny company with the school and blah, blah, blah. And I went to All In because a student of mine sang the national anthem. So,
really?
Yeah, Shalandra, her name
yeah,
was.
Yeah,
so
I
she
remember
did,
her, yeah.
So she did the national anthem. And so I drove her to All In because All In was kind of like, hey,
Chicago?
Yeah, and yeah. It was like, if you can get there, one of those type of
right.
deals, right? Like, because it was all fun, you know. So I was like, yeah, I'll bring you there. And my wife and I went as fans. And then they needed someone to produce the show. And luckily I was there. And I guess, unbeknownst to myself, like Cody had told his agent, like, that guy's coming with me wherever I go.
Hmm.
I had thought, because I was training Brandy at the time too.
Oh.
I had thought that like he was just going to go back to WWE. And like I'd never see him again.
Guy.
Yeah, because I'm like, there's no
He's
way
just
Ring of
use
Honor.
This, yeah.
Right. There's no way Ring of Honor is going to pay like this crazy amount of money that they deserve. And I'll never see him again. And maybe we'll be friends, but like, I know I can't get a job there. And I'm not going to, I don't have the respect from the wrestling community to be an agent somewhere, you know? So it was just like, but I was just doing it under like, just at least like, I've always just wanted to be respected. That's it. You know, just by my peers. Like, that's something for me. It's not about the money. It's really just like, to know, like, man, like Chris Jericho mm-hmm. thought that was great. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Something like that. Like, I don't just get looked at as some stooge, even though like I'm a stooge, you know. And so when that happened, I produced the show for like the first half till he was done. And then when AEW started, he was like, hey, do you want to come to Jacksonville and film BTE for the rally? And I was like, sure. It was my first day of a beginner class. So a beginner class at the time was $1,500, and there were six people signed up. So I was like, man, I'm going to make money finally, you know? First day I had to leave, you know? And the students loved it. They were like, oh, my God, you're going to AEW.
That makes them feel even more like that they picked the right place.
They loved it. I hated it. But then when I got here, they were like, yeah, we'll offer you this job as an assistant. But I also knew that, like, it's a new company, and they don't have everything in place. And as much as everyone thinks that they're going to do stuff, like, they might not be able to get to it or whatever it was. And it was in Vegas when I realized, like, not everyone had the music licenses done and all this stuff. And I was up to like 5 a.m. the night before. And then we had a meeting the next day, and I was just supposed to sit there and be quiet. And Cody calls it the Jerry Maguire moment. Because I didn't flip out, but like, I guess I did.
Mm-hmm.
But it was more along the lines of like, hey guys, just to let you know too, like, I can do other stuff. Like, I don't have to just get coffee. I don't have to just
right.
bring people from the lobby to the room. Like, I can do a lot of stuff. I can coach matches. I can help with promos. Like, I just wanted to let it be known that it was there. And Cody finally was just like, dude, you can't. Like, are you going to jump out of this window? Like, you know, like, just tell me what you want. And I was like, I don't want a job in wrestling without being involved in wrestling. Mm-hmm. You know, I could be a secretary anywhere.
Yeah.
You know what
yeah,
I mean?
Yeah,
like, if you're going to do that to me in wrestling and be like, oh, but you can't be a part of wrestling, that's going to, like, really hurt me more than anything. So they were like, yeah, we'll give you this gig. And then I mentioned wrestling once, and that was not well received. And I was like, okay. So I kind of let that be, you know, I didn't do it. And then one day we were on a call, and Tony was like, hey, I think we'll put QT in this dark match. And I was like, oh. So then Cody, like, texted me on the side during the call, like, well, there you go. You got it, you know?
Yeah, yeah,
so
yeah.
It's crazy that all the nepotism, it was never Cody that pushed for me to wrestle.
Mm-hmm.
He always wanted me to be his assistant because I was really good at that. But I told him, like, I'll be good at anything because I have the drive to do it. You know what I mean? But I'm going to mess up a lot, like, all the time because I'm not trained.
But see, just to jump in quickly, like I said, and this is not a cutdown. It's the same with Eddie Kingston. I'd never heard of you before.
Of course.
I didn't know the name. I didn't know. And also then when I started seeing you and kind of, okay, he's Cody's guy. But then finding out all the different things that you do, you're like a really good, like, assistant coach to coach, in that you do a lot of stuff that no one really realizes. And like a hockey player who played third line for 10 years, maybe won a Stanley Cup, always worked hard, scored 10 goals a year, but everybody wanted him on their team.
Right.
But then once he graduates out and becomes a great coach.
So,
you know,
we talk about that. Like, for instance, you know, Michael Jordan doesn't need to open a basketball school.
Yeah.
He's not going
to. That's right, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, like, that's why I think, because I don't have that big name, that I really try to go above and beyond to do everything. And sometimes it backfires and I get so stressed and, you know, like, I try not to show it. But I also didn't want anyone to know either, because the same reason, like Dean Malenko, like, he's never heard of me, and he shouldn't have. So, like, how am I going to go to Dean and say, like, hey, Dean, this is what you're doing? You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
So I always told Cody, even Tony, like, hey, I don't want people to, I'd rather be the silent guy that just does a lot of the stuff, because at the end of the day, like, I don't need people. Like, when there was a battle royal, we did a tag battle royal that Tony and I kind of, like, helped out with. And Meltzer wrote about, like, oh, it was put together by Tony Khan and QT. And I'm like, oh, don't say me, you know? Like, as great as it is, like, it's not like the fans might get mad more than anything. Like, why is this guy doing
that? But I'll say this, though, and you know this. Like, Dean is always my coach, the agent, producer. Until finally recently, I was like, he's being wasted with me because I put together my stuff. I don't always ask Dean his opinion.
Sure.
But put him with some guys that he can really be Dean Malenko with. And,
yeah.
And I said, just put QT with me, because the few times when I had a question for you, or do you have any suggestions, you came up with a couple things.
Yeah.
And that's like Jamie Noble was like that. It didn't have to be a lot. But Dean did it last week with me and Max's match at the pay-per-view. Sometimes one idea is all you need to fit everything together, you know? And
right.
I was like, yeah, just put QT with me and let, you know, let me bounce off, you know, 99% if he has 1%, and let Dean go do 50-50 with the guys, you know?
And that's the thing, too, is, like, I think it helps that being on the indies for so long,
right,
I've seen so many things where I'm like, a lot of it is bad, but then some of it are really good ideas that, like, no one, like, you just don't think about them.
Right.
And then it's, you know, every now and then I have a good idea where someone's like, man, kid's pretty, you know? It's like, in Ring of Honor, I brought it up to Bubba because I was trained by him at one point, and I said something about agenting, and he kind of broke it down to me and, like, how are you going to tell some of these bigger names? Like, the perception isn't there for you to be able to, and it made perfect sense. And I was like, well, we could just change the perception, I guess. Like, tell them, like, this guy's really good at the job, but it just never got to that point, like. And then AEW started, thank God, because I didn't know, like, what I was going to do. And then a buddy of mine went to WWE, and we spoke about it. But, like, even then I was like, well, I don't want to be number 9,826, you know, this guy. Like, I'd rather be number 10. You know what I mean?
I remember when I first started going to Hollywood, Rock hooked me up with one of his agents. I think it was maybe CAA or whatever. And he's like, so I was talking to the guy. He's a pretty nice guy. And he goes, this isn't the agency for you yet. You need, because he goes, he opened up this book of like 2,000 clients. He's like, you don't want to be Tom Sexsmith. I've never heard who Tom Sexsmith is, and we rep him.
Yeah.
You want to be Chris Jericho, you know, that people know, and that, like you said, so to be just a guy, has never been the goal. You want to be somebody that has some steam and some spotlight.
Right. Yeah, it's you know, like I said, it's always about, for me, the recognition and the respect of my peers.
Of your peers, yeah.
The positive is that the money comes with it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, that's the positive, but it's never been about that. I mean, I don't ever want to go back. I was telling Tony one day, like, I was talking about what I was making before AEW, and I was okay. I was happy. I was enjoying my life. I never want to go back to that.
Yeah.
Never again. But, you know, at least I know as long as there's wrestling involved, I'll be okay.
So what was your first match in AEW?
It was, coincidentally, Peter Avalon and myself versus Dustin and Sonny Kiss.
On Dark?
On Dark. It was in Pittsburgh. I flew my mother up from from Florida. She sat front row. She was going crazy with the Pittsburgh Steelers
towel. That's right. Yeah.
Because like she texted me. It was like week three or something. You had texted me. You were on the plane watching it. And you were like, it was like you watched a rerun or whatever.
Yeah.
And you were like, dude, I'm watching your mom right now going crazy. She was loving it. She's never, you know, she always likes watching me, but she never got to sit front row like that, you know. So it was cool. But I just thought it would be like a one-off here and there. And then there were times where every post-show I'd go out with the headset on and Moxley would give me the DDT. Tony loved that thing of like sending the people home happy. And I was like, man, I'm never going to get out of this. Yeah. Like, this is what my career, you know, hey, at least I get in the ring, you know. Mm-hmm. And then they made me team with Cody. And like, that's when I did the QT special.
What match was that again? You and Cody.
That
versus...
was in Dallas, where I was MJF picked me to be Cody's partner
because
I was the loser wrestler.
Yeah.
And 10 out of 10 times, I hit the QT special without touching the ropes. But I told Cody, I was like, I don't want to do it like that. I want to do it messed up. I think if I do it like Jack Evans, people are just gonna be like, "Oh, it's just like another flip." But if I do it like I had no idea I could do it,
your character would never do it perfectly.
My character wouldn't do it perfectly, you know. Literally, like I have video, and I've always told Cody, like, I want to tweet it. When people say, like, I can't, I like, no, I can. I just, like, this is what we do, though. This is the fun of what we do, you know? It's so.
The cutie, not the QT special. I call it the cutie special, CUTIE.
Yeah, the cutie special, which is where QT came from. So back in the day, it was a gimmick where I didn't want people to hit me in the face. I was Mr. Irresistible. They told me I couldn't be a Mr. something because it was 2009 at the time and, you know, wrestling had evolved.
Yeah, right.
So, sure, I was like, all right, I'll pick something. And I saw QT somewhere. I was like, that's kind of cool. Like, at the time, I was a little cutie, I guess. I was 24. You know, now I'm like not cutie
grizzled.
At all. Yeah, I'm grizzled, balding, scars everywhere.
But let's talk when like I said, when I first started getting to know you, because the first time we ever worked together, because you had the apple. I want to talk about the apple.
Yeah.
And I came to the Pages Center.
Yeah.
Did you call it a performance center?
The DDP.
And we filmed some stuff, and I was like, who is this guy? And I was supposed to hit you with a cane, hit you with something or other.
Yeah. When you say that, so before that, Cody had like kind of told me like, hey, yeah, you're getting a lot of heat with this apple. And I was like, why? What did I do? So the apple thing was like, he was calling Jungle Boy to hire him. They wanted to video it. And I was just standing there holding his phone like a jerk. You know what I mean? Like,
he's talking?
Who's this pretentious guy that can't hold his own phone?
That's right.
And who's this idiot standing next to him holding it, you know? So then the director, Steve, he was like, so I was eating an apple. And then he was like, you should just do it every video. Like, it'll be funny. After a while, it'll catch on. And I was like, whatever. And I was trying to lose weight anyway. So instead of eating candy like I was doing. And then it just started, people started like, AEW, Carlito, AEW, Carlito. Right. And I was just like, so then we just kept doing it. But then Cody was like, I think Chris might have a problem with the apple. And I was like, oh my God, I don't even know Chris yet, you know? And I was like, why? He goes, you never know. He's like, I don't know. He goes, maybe he's just having fun. Like, and then he's like, yeah, he's going to come here and beat you up. And I was like, like he's going to hurt me, you know? I was like, oh no. And then when you hit me, I was like, he barely touched me. Yeah. Like this whole time I'm worried, you know? Like here I did. I pissed off the only guy I didn't want to piss off, you know?
No, I think it's just because, like I said, I didn't know who you were. And I didn't know what the point of the apple was. It's just one of those things that stuck in my craw. What the hell's up with this stupid apple?
Right. Who's this idiot going into business for himself? That's really and that's what it was, though. Yeah. Like, legitimately, that's what Steve. So Cody didn't like it either. But that's what Steve said. He goes, if you just keep having an apple, like, it'll get over. It'll get over. And I'm like, okay, well, I had nothing to lose at that point.
Yeah.
You know?
So you became known as the apple guy.
As the apple guy. Now I don't even bring the apple. And one of my students asked me about it. I was like, I've passed the apple.
Yeah.
Like, I don't need it anymore.
You've evolved.
I've evolved.
Exactly.
They're like, okay, whatever. It's on all your gear. I'm like, yeah, sure.
So then once I started to get to know you, because the one time you guys came over to my house for a booking meeting that Cody had, and so then he pointed out your documentary, which he claims you made it just to get signed. That's the joke between us. But it was actually really well done, and it actually told a hell of a story about your career, which I did not know. How did the documentary come about, and what was kind of the whole purpose of it?
So this kid, Frank, his brother.
What's it called again?
It's called... Real original.
Yeah.
The Wrestler. Oh. A QT Marshall story. Oh. I said it should be called Wrestling with Reese's.
Right.
Because that's like my life, you know, wrestling with Reese's. I just can't get into shape. That was always like, I think the reason
wrestling
why
with
I never
Reese's,
succeeded.
Yeah.
But so we did this kid, Frank, his older brother, I knew him from Orlando. We all went to the gym together. And he goes, hey, my brother just graduated from Full Sail. He wants to do a documentary on wrestling. Can you train him? I was like, yeah, sure. He came to the school at the time in New Jersey, Monster Factory. And right away, like watched a couple of drills and was like, I'm not doing this. Mm-hmm. And he was like, what if I just follow you? So I said, yeah, as long as you don't bother like my life, you know, you can film everything. I just can't, you just don't bother me. Like I'm busy. I don't want to, and I don't like this stuff either. I'm not comfortable being on camera, especially when it's weird talking about my failures, you know? Mm-hmm. And cause I'm not anyone famous. So like follow me to the supermarket is just weird. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like people looking at me like I'm a somebody and I'm not, you know what I mean? So, it's just like awkward. It's like, who's this idiot that paid some random guy?
Yeah, exactly.
So,
trying to be a hot shot.
So long story short, he just he said, no problem. I'll film you. And then while that was happening, the WWE had offered me a performance center tryout. In the midst of him filming, they took it away for age, all the reasons.
So just to slow down. So performance center tryout is that you go to the performance center for 3-4 days.
Yeah,
that's when they put you through all of these drills, and
ridiculous drills.
It really is. And then if you do good, they maybe will bring you into NXT.
Yeah, or if you do good, they might let you have a wrestling match. The reason that you're there, you know what I mean?
So they offered you the tryout.
They offered me the tryout at a SmackDown. I was an extra at a SmackDown. I did the 5-minute match at 2:00.
In front of nobody,
which luckily I've been doing that in training for the past 12 years. So at the time, so
was it like
easy.
A Scott Armstrong watching
Scott,
or something?
Scott Armstrong and William Regal.
Regal, right.
And Regal pulled me aside and said, hey, well, you know, long story short, we'll offer you in September, you'll come down, and yada, yada, yada. Well, at the time, then Danny Cage, who owns the Monster Factory, brought in Gerald Briscoe to do a different tryout that he does every year where Gerald, and he ends up getting guys signed all the time. I think what happened was Gerald had sent like 4 names in. And he's only supposed to send one, like, collegiate wrestler. And he ended up sending, like, a bunch. And they just took mine out. So I was, like, real livid at the time. Like, what the?
So you got the tryout at the building.
Yeah.
And then because you had another tryout where Gerald was, he kind of doubled down?
Yeah, I think they just were like,
Enough
of this guy, right. We didn't do it when he was living in Florida, so why do it now?
But they were going to bring you in anyways.
And they might, you know, I still have the emails, too. Like, when I asked Regal, like, hey, what's going on? Like, I had the tryout, now it's taken away. Is it because, and I guess I, like, led him to the answer. Like, is it because of my age? Is it because of, and he just was like, yes, unfortunately, like, we'll still use you as an extra, blah, blah, blah.
And how old were you at the time?
30, you know? Yeah, it's not, like, but, you know, at the time, because even at the SmackDown, he said, like, if we hired you, how many people would order the network for you? Because that was, like, when they were pushing the network. Right. And I was like, you know, my mom, my dad, you know, they might even share the password. Like, I didn't have an answer.
Yeah.
And he was like, and I specifically told him, I was like, so if you're telling me that I can't work here because of that, but I'm good enough to work here, like, I can live with that deep down. Mm-hmm. Hey, as long as you can tell me, like, my work is great. Like, I'm happy with that. And but then I guess he felt bad. So maybe that's why we did the whole, well, we're going to give you the try. I don't know what the reason was. It was, you know, it's funny you brought up The Rock. Like, he always talks about the NFL being the best thing that never happened to him.
Right.
Same with me. Like, right. It was the best thing that never happened because it made me, like, go all in on wrestling because I always had a really good job. I always made really good money because I never wanted to be the guy.
You're a hustler,
that, yeah. I never wanted to be the guy that, like, lived in my car for my dream. Whereas maybe if I did, like, that's why I always tell my mom, like, maybe if I did do that when I was younger, it would have worked instead of making crazy money and having nice cars and all this stuff. But, you know, to each their own. It's right. I'm happy. So
but then you mentioned that they wouldn't hire you because of your neck.
Yeah. So when it was after that, it was like 2016, a year after, because after they told me the tryout was gone, I went and got my neck fixed. So I had my surgery on my neck. I had two of my discs taken out and fused up and stuff. And then I went back to do more extra work because I was like, there's nothing else. What am I going to do? And then I spoke to Regal again, and he was like, listen, like, you're just kind of a liability. And what happened was I got booked as an extra at NXT, and they wanted me to work with the Authors of Pain. And I said no because I didn't have anything to lose except my life and my career.
Because they're super big and super green.
Super big, and it was a 2-on-1. It was like me and another extra versus this one guy. And I remember like Scotty Tuhati came up. He was the agent. He's like, hey, it's going to be you two guys. And I'm looking around and I asked the guy. He's a nice guy too. But like I could see he had already hurt somebody. Actually, he hurt the guy that we just signed, Anthony Bowens. Hurt him. Yeah, because he powerbombed one guy onto Anthony Bowens' head.
Oh my God.
So like.
Was that Rezar or Akam or?
The shorter one.
One of the two, yeah.
So I said to him, I was like, hey, what moves do you think you're going to do to us? And he was like, well, what does it matter? I was like, well, I'm just curious. You know, I was trying to
politic. I'd like to know, yeah.
But I'd like to know what you plan. And he was like, oh, I'll probably do this, and then a power bomb, and I'll power bomb the other guy on you, and then I'll DVD you guys. So the short of it was like, I literally just looked at him. I was like, oh, okay. And I looked at this guy. I was like, nope, not doing it. Mm-hmm. And he was like, what do you mean? I was like, so I had this neck surgery. And it turned into like, hey, don't take the booking then, which I was like, you don't even have to pay me. I'll drive back to Atlanta now. I'm okay with it. Don't ever book me again. Like, yeah. It is what it is. We tried, and I'll get in the ring with anyone else. Like, put me with Bobby Roode. Put me with these guys that aren't going to hurt me. But the kid who took my place got hurt.
Really?
He put him in a side headlock, and he just picked him up and threw him into the aisleway.
Oh, like, my gosh.
Yeah, you know, yeah. He didn't mean to do it, but he's just so strong. And I remember telling Albert.
Matt Bloom.
Because he said, you know, we specifically chose you for this spot because you can sell. And I was like, well, I really appreciate it. But here's what's going to happen. I'm going to take these moves and I'm either going to get up and be okay and I'm going to make $200 or I'm never going to walk again and I'm going to make $200. So like to me, it's just not worth it, you know. And it was a real come to Jesus moment with myself. Like I'm burying myself right now and I'll never get another.
You stood up for what you believe in because the third option is you get up, you make $200 and nothing else ever happens.
Right.
Or if it does, you'll be the job guy of the week the next week.
Yep.
Right? What's the
and
point?
And that's kind of where I knew I was always going to be, which, you know, it's just that was never my dream. You know what I mean? Like, even though, like, that was what I had always wanted. Like, put me with the football player. Like, I'm good at making other people look good. So I don't mind doing that. But I also want to get a little bit of the, showbiz part.
Yeah.
So.
But let me ask you this, because there's something in the documentary that you mentioned but never really gets explained. And it's about, it was about a year when I saw it. I may be paraphrasing, but something about Ring of Honor. And you were working with Vlad, but someone says, yeah, you blew your chance in Ring of Honor too.
Yeah, so when I first started with Ring of Honor, they offered me a contract. I did a tryout. It was like a paid tryout, but then it was a two-day tryout. By the end of day one, it was Jim Cornette at the time, Delirious, and Kevin Kelly. And they were like, hey, as long as you show up tomorrow, you got a job. And I was like, oh, that's great. Like, cool, you know? And then
what year was this?
2011.
Gotcha.
So then I get up there, and I had never been in like a big company before, so I didn't know the politics of this, that, and the other. And like right away, I didn't make any friends, you know? And I was like, you know, I always goof around, and I ended up making a joke to someone about like, this kid hurt me, like bad. And I
physically
in a match, and I made him look really good. He was Jimmy Jacobs' guy. So like I knew he had all these friends, so I made him look really good because he did Brazilian capoeira like wrestling. He kicked me in the head, though, maybe five times. And I gave him an Alabama slam, and I kind of hurt him. But I checked on him. I called him the next day. Well, the next taping, someone came up to me and was like, hey, you shouldn't do that Alabama slam. He looks like you're hurting people. And I was like, hey, where was everyone asking me like when he kicked me in the head seven times?
Right.
Mind you, I had already followed up with the guy, and him and I are real close because it was our first tryout match together, this, that, and the other. But that spread real quick. Plus, I was already cutting promos on the world champion at the time, like behind the scenes, that we never aired them, but they just wanted to see because they really liked me because I was young, I was bigger, whatever.
Obviously
the reasons Cornette
a little,
says.
Little attitude in a good way.
Yeah, right. Like, yeah. And so that was how it started. Then, like, third match in, I got hurt on my neck. Then I broke my nose. Hangman and I had a match where I was supposed to squash him in 4 minutes. He broke my nose in 30 seconds. So I'm just bleeding.
You were supposed to squash Hangman.
Yeah. Wow. It was 19, and I was like, hey, man, I'll let you get some stuff in, whatever you want to do. Of course, first thing, breaks my nose. Yeah. And I started to get fat because I was injured, and I had a lot of life stuff going on. And then I finally just asked for my release. I hated it that much where I was just like, I don't want to be here. I'm making $150 a match. Like, when they gave me the contract, I didn't laugh, but I said, like, is this real?
Mm-hmm.
And they were like, what do you mean? They're like, this is what the contract is. Like, $150 a match. We work three times a month. That's $450. It doesn't pay for my car.
Right.
And they're like, what kind of car do you drive? I said, it doesn't matter what kind of car I drive. It's a Cadillac, by the way, but it doesn't matter. Like, this isn't a real job. Like, I need to, have my normal life. And
the realities of wrestling hit you
then. The realities
of
wrestling. So when that happened, I asked for my release. They wouldn't give it to me because
really?
I guess Shelton Benjamin had just asked for his release too.
Yes.
And what happened was I was in Florida, And NXT called. They needed someone. They were just starting to use extras. And I was like, hey, I'm under contract until, like, when the episode airs, I won't be under contract anymore, but I am right now. And the girl at the office was like, hey, if you don't care, we don't care. And honestly, at the time, I was like, I don't care. She's like, and I'll book you for the next six that you've asked for. Because I had, hey, my contract's about to be up. I see you're in all these dates for extra work, you know? She's like, if you do this for us. So, of course, right away, I do the match, and it's a taped NXT show. Before I'm even out of the ring, my phone's blown up. Jeff Jones, who was working at Ring of Honor. Stooge Jeff Jones and I, you know, we're stooges now together. But right away, he's like, are you doing something you're not supposed to be doing? And I was like, what are they going to do, take my $150? Like, fire me. I asked for my release. And so that's kind of where – then when the WWE thing didn't work out, it was like, oh, that was dumb.
You ended up pulling the bag, yeah.
Yeah, it was a little stupid. But I was young and delirious at the time. He understood. He was like, hey, man, legally I have to be mad at you because you breached your contract. Mm-hmm. But your contract is up in 2 weeks. Like, it is what it is. Well, don't worry about it. We're just not going to re-sign you as a punishment. And I just continued to work for them on and off after that. Mm-hmm. So.
So when The Wrestler was completed, the documentary, what did you do with it?
So I didn't, honestly, I didn't do anything. I let the kid do everything because it was his dream to be this famous director. Not my dream. I didn't ask him for anything. I get no money out of it. That's why I don't really plug it either unless he asked me
but
to.
It's a well-done piece of film,
it is,
though.
For somebody, like, he had all these ideas. He had a vision. I remember when they took the tryout away. He was like, dude, this is the best thing ever. And I was like, bro.
For him.
I'm literally, like, crying over here, you know? And he was like, this is the best because now there's a – he's like, your life looked so perfect before that, you know? And I was like, oh, okay, well, yeah, I work hard outside of wrestling, you know?
Was it like a Home Depot or something you were doing?
So a Snap-on Tools.
Snap-on
Tools.
Yeah.
My stepfather owned three routes, like tool routes, and I was running the whole business with him. So that was always the fallback, and I never liked it. But I'm a good salesman. I don't know anything about tools, but I'm personable. Yeah. And of course, they love the idea of like Mike the Wrestler coming to sell tools, you know? When's your next indie show? Like, we got to go, you know? Yeah. There was even a point where I was beating up a babyface once and all my customers were there. And I looked over and I said, Cornwell Tools is better. And I stomped the guy like just because like they popped, you know? Yeah, it was just fun for them, right? But he ended up like submitting it to every film festival. And then sure enough, he's like, hey, we got accepted to San Diego Comic-Con. You want to come out here? And I was like, dude, I don't have money to fly out there. He's like, we'll gather it up somehow. And they flew me out there. I stayed at an Airbnb. I convinced a buddy of mine to pay for the Airbnb if I gave him my guest pass instead of bringing my wife. Because he's a big Game of Thrones guy, all this stuff. And we went, and they made me watch the thing again in front of like 26 people. And then somehow we won. And I was just like, what the hell is going on here? And then I asked the judges. I was like, why did we win? Like, what was the main reason? And the girl who's like a stunt girl, Tamiko or something. Anyway, she told me, she said, it's not a wrestling story. It's a story about like someone following their dreams. Like, it hits home to everybody. Anyone that's ever wanted to do anything in their lives, it really hits home. And there's like that one scene with my mom and my wife where they're like berating me about quitting.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm just like... And at the time, I was like, why would I quit? Like, it doesn't make any sense. I could still wrestle on the weekends, still have my normal job. Why would I just give up because someone tells me no? Mm. It doesn't make sense. Like, my wife told me no the first time I asked her out, too. You know what I mean? My mom told me no when I said I wanted to be. So, you know, so it was that scene, though, that really hooked everybody in. And Cody laughs because my wife's one of the nicest people ever. Mm-hmm. But at the time, she wasn't because she was so frustrated. And once my mom started like berating me, it was like, oh, I can jump in.
Oh,
and then
she
like,
now you're promoted.
And then she even said like, and then what, one day we're just gonna wake up and move to Atlanta? And then that's what we ended up doing a year later, you know? The best move we ever made.
Right. So when we talked about kind of in AEW and all the stuff that you do, something that's interesting to me, and you can talk as much or as little about it you want, is putting together the actual shows.
Yeah.
Because somebody asked me the other day who does that, and I was like, what's QT as far as putting, I don't know, putting the things in order? Like,
yeah, so originally, like, I saw Cody kind of helping with the format of a pay-per-view, and I was like, oh, that'd be cool. Like, I would like to do that, you know?
Format is kind of the order of the matches,
the order
and all
of the
segments
matches
and commercials and whatever it may
right
be.
And then when TV started, I asked if I could do it, and I mean, now it's to the point where, like, so they send me, you know, Tony and the guys, they send me the list of the matches and the order of the matches. And then I kind of just create, right? Like, And a lot of times I'm wrong. Mm-hmm. So like, there's a lot of times where someone will be like, hey, that shouldn't go there and that. But I think it's also the stress of not having someone else do it, that I can do it. And then they can always just fix my mistakes. Like, I don't know what I'm doing. I'm just kind of going off of, I were watching this show.
But somebody has to do that. Somebody has to put together the skeleton of what they're doing and change it any way we want. But here's the initial scratch track that you can work off of, at least, if nothing else.
Yeah. And some of it's hard because I don't know all the creative stuff. Mm-hmm. So I'm kind of just guessing at times, too. And I don't want to know a lot of stuff either.
About the finishes and the angles.
Like, so a lot of times it just says post-match.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, well, what's the post? And then I have all these guys coming up to me. Hey, what's the post-match? What are we doing? I'm like, I have no idea.
But that's the way it should be. Like, even WWE, in the formats, would always say that, because you don't need to leave it around and somebody picks it up or whatever and reads these big surprises.
Right, exactly. But yeah, it's something that I enjoy doing, and I like learning about it because, again, how long am I really – if it were up to me, I'd wrestle till I'm 70. Mm-hmm. But, you know, is the shelf life there? Is my star power? I don't even have star power. So, like, how can I imagine? So, unless I'm just going to continue to do jobs, you know what I mean? I always wanted to do it. And like I said, it's fun for me to think, like, okay, before we go to commercial, like, if I were watching this show and I knew, if I didn't know Chris Jericho was coming up next, I might change the channel. Mm. But if we'll be right back with Chris Jericho, like, and you have a graphic that says up next, I would stay tuned, or I'd make sure that I come back before the 3 minutes are up, like the average commercial. So that's fun for me. And like I said, I never really go out of the way to tell people that stuff too, because we just did. But I also don't want, like, I like not being somebody that anyone would ever feel threatened by, if that makes sense. You know, it's like, oh, he's just that guy that just kind of helps out. And it's like, well, really, that guy does a lot of crap. You know what I mean?
Right.
I'd rather not be known as that, because no one bothers me.
It's not being known as that, but it's also, like I said, like, I had no idea. You know, like, when we're doing, so you're saying that you get the matches in the order that they want them and then flesh it out.
Yeah,
but a lot of times, because when we do conference calls and stuff, a lot of times you don't have the format until minutes before. Like last time, I think 5 minutes before you got it sent out.
So yeah, like, there's always changes because Tony's so busy. There's always changes.
He's always got stuff going on.
And then I still don't have a group in my phone that says, like, production meeting group, where it's all 55 names or whatever it is. So I have to individually put them in.
So
sometimes I'll set it up and get ready to do it, and then all of a sudden he'll be like, oh, let's change this.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, I can't. Like, I have 3 minutes, and then I'm sweating, my heart's racing, and like,
everyone's waiting on you.
Yeah, and everyone's like, QT, where's it? And then I'm getting text messages, and they're coming up while I'm trying to change the thing, and I'm just like
me.
Yeah. And then, like, when even yesterday with the phone number. So I had copied the phone number to send it to Dustin, but I didn't copy it. I cut it. So when I emailed it, Tony texts me, he's like, hey, dude, you forgot the phone number, LOL. And I'm just like, oh, my. There's always something, you know?
But I always think maybe it's me. Like, maybe I did something wrong. I screwed up or whatever, you know?
No, it's always me. It's always me. I told Cody from the beginning, like, I'm not going to be good at the job, but I'm going to work harder than everybody.
Yeah.
So just know that you're always going to get mistakes. You're always going to get complaints. Like, I forgot to title someone's email because I treated it as a text message once. Well, he was the singer's agent of the national anthem at Double or Nothing, like the guy that sang in Hamilton. And, like, apparently his agent got real fired up about it. And I was just like, I'm sorry. What do you want me to say? He literally wrote something. I just wrote back, okay, dude, no worries. Like, we'll get it figured out. But I didn't put, like, Mr. blah, blah, blah. And I was just like, man, I messed up. What do you want me to say, you know? Yeah, and then there's from the desk of. That was another one that I guess – got Cody a lot of heat, but I was trying to be nice, you know?
You sent the email from the desk?
Yeah, and I was like, it was just trying to let people know it's from Cody. It's not from me. Like, hey, don't, you know, I don't speak like this.
So what does Cody say? Like, dude, come here.
No, so he didn't even know. It was one day after, like, he had went somewhere, and we were outside, like, at the, you know, eating dinner, and I said something about from the desk of, and Tony and the Bucks were like, so he never asked you to do that? I was like, no, that was just, like, what I Googled, how to send a professional email. And they're like, oh, my God, you have no idea how many people, like, talk about him behind his back about that. Like, and I'm just like, here I am, that getting this guy buried all because, like, Google told me to do this.
Right.
So.
But you're also the guy, too. Like, I remember early on, for some reason, there was always a screw-up with my hotel room.
My God.
I don't even remember.
I thought about that this morning, actually.
Yeah. I don't remember what the screw-up was. Yeah.
There was someone else that was in charge, and it was never – but because I was the go-to guy, I remember it was, like, Washington, D.C., first Dynamite. And I'm with my wife, and I get a message from you because I was, like, formatting the show. And I was like, hey, dude, my hotel, like, whatever the the floor of the beds or whatever it was. And I was like,
oh, double beds. That's what it was.
So yeah. I had messaged the guy that was in charge at the time and no answer. And I'm just like, screw it. And I just went down to the bottom, you know, to the lobby. I was like, hey, I need a king size, you know, and they're like, yeah, no problem. And so, but then it was like a couple weeks in a row. Yes. And I'm like, finally, I was like, I got like six people on an email. I was like, how hard is this?
No, like, the funny thing is too, it sounds like, oh, Jericho being a prima donna. But the first time my wife was actually with me.
Right.
So that's like two double beds. And like, I've been traveling for 30 years. I like a king bed.
Of course, it's easy to do. Yeah,
and that's why when it became just a thing. It's like a couple weeks when like, I know this is going to sound another pretentious thing, but we always have food after the show. And a lot of times everyone eats it before I get there. So I have nothing. And said, so, can we just leave one thing for me? And so you guys would write my name on it. Yeah. And when it's not there, I'm texting you and Harrington at 2 o'clock in the morning. Where's my food?
Yeah, now I was homesick because I had missed the stretch. And it was like, Britt Baker messaged me and she was like, hey, so Jericho didn't get food this time. And I'm like, okay, one, I can't do anything. Like, what do you want me to do? I'll order food to his room. I don't know. And two, like, police the locker room, guys. Yeah, like, what the hell? Like, tell them. So for a while, we had contracted talent only, you know? And then it was a little rough, like, but at the same time, like, that is what it is, guys. Like, if you go to any movie or TV show, like, you don't eat with the cast if you're an extra.
Yeah, and the funny thing is, even just eating at all, because as you know, there's no other company in the world that has food for you after the show, unless you're in Europe with WWE. But in
New
the
York
United
strip
States,
steaks?
Strip steaks, salmon, cheeseburgers, pizza. It's a great stuff.
Yeah.
So to me, and once again, I don't think it's too much to ask for if you're an extra that you wait your turn. Like, if we go open for Iron Maiden, and there's catering, we eat after Iron Maiden.
Sure.
That's just how it goes. Iron Maiden, their crew eat first.
Yeah.
Then Fozzy and our crew eat second. That's it.
Of course.
If I snuck in line and took freaking Bruce Dickinson's, you know,
the
potatoes and mash or whatever, I'd be in big trouble, you know?
Of course. The other day I said something loud to someone else and I felt bad because one of the guys, one of the extras, who's like really nice, you could see him like eat real quick, pack his food and walk out. Because I had said it loud because Wardlow didn't get like one of his meals.
Yeah.
And he had to eat something that, not that he cared. He was just happy to have food because he's a nice guy. But like, I was like, yeah, because for some reason there's 100 extras in here eating. And I was like very passive aggressive about it.
Yeah.
And this poor guy like just got up and walked out like slowly. And I had to call him back in like, hey, I wasn't talking about you, man. But I was 100%.
Yeah. So are you kind of in charge of booking extras as well?
So unless there's somebody that we've specifically asked to bring in, yes. Mm. And part of it was during the pandemic when it first started because we filmed at the school. So I had all these people. Now it's too much. Like it is. Like my inbox, especially after this bunkhouse match, everything is, dude, congrats on that match. Oh, it's so great. Are there any spots available for Dark? And because, I mean, as a aspiring wrestler, like you see what the guys get on Dark. It's not just go out there and take two moves and you're done. Like you're getting competitive matches.
Dark is as much of a wrestling show as any other show on TV. Yeah.
It's like WCW worldwide, you know? Like
absolutely.
They're good matches. So I get it 100%, but I always, now there's going to be a lot of people listening to this, you don't have to butter me up. Like I'm a wrestler first. Just tell me like, hey, I'm willing to do whatever it takes. Sure. If you, as long as you bring your, you know, your valid COVID test and you follow the protocols, and when you're here, you're not a jerk. You're just a normal guy that, and then you do your job. Like, cool. The other thing is, I tell them, cheer when you're in the audience.
Yeah.
We care about that more than any work that you're ever going to do because we don't want silence. So, like, I know today we're going to have a big meeting with a bunch of them about it. Yeah. So,
but I mean, look for over the summer when you know Pineapple Pete was here.
Sure.
He got that gig specifically because he was always going nuts in the crowd.
Yeah,
that's why he got it.
Yeah,
you know?
100%. Yeah, and he was someone that because in Atlanta he used to come by and help out at the school, and we just needed people. Tony was like, "I just need as many as we can. We don't know what we're filming yet. We don't know what's going to happen."
So let's talk about that. That's a great story. I'm glad you brought that up. So I was in. I'll tell you from my side. We had done that Release the Hounds promo with the Vanguard one and all that stuff. And so that was the week that I was just, we'll do this vignette and that'll be cool. And then the next week, just by pure happenstance, I was going to do commentary for the week. So we're finished that. And right during that show, they said that Florida was closing down. Mm. And I said to Tony, what are you going to do? And he said, we're filming, you know, 6 hours of TV in Atlanta tomorrow. And I said, well, I got to go. He's like, you'll fly in? It's like, you're right, so flying.
Right.
A, from a company man standpoint. B, I ain't missing 6 weeks of TV.
Of course.
I can't afford to do that because 6 weeks is 100 years in wrestling times.
Yeah.
So that's kind of what I heard of mine. So talk about what went on yours because we did the shows at your school.
Yeah. So when they first brought it up, I was like, oh, man.
When did they bring it up?
About like 2 or 3 weeks before that. They're like, hey, if we shut down, like, could we film at the school? And I was like, yeah, because, I mean, the school is a giant training facility, but they're not doing anything right now. And I'm sure there's a way that you guys could work out a deal with them and this, that, and the other. And it's funny you say about missing TV, because the night of the live show, I debuted with Dustin, Natural Nightmares debut. The next day, we filmed 6 weeks, and I didn't leave the table. And Tony wrote, like, all these matches, and I'm, like, looking, and I'm not on any of them. And I'm thinking, like, okay, like, I'm here, like, not even a dart and nothing. And Cody caught me in the production office eating candy. And he was like, what are you doing, dude? You just debuted. I'm like, I'm not on for 6 weeks. So I got 6 weeks to, you know, like, get back in shape, you know. And he was, but yeah, once they came, and Keith and, you know, their production team came by, and they're like, we could do this, we could do this. So it was just so cool the way they transformed it into like a little arena that now I've spent probably about almost 30 grand out of my own money to make what it looked like that night. I've just been going off the picture and recreating it for my students so they can have a place
where
I can't do it, but at least they can run their own shows and, you know, my business partners and stuff. And then the campers that are not able to wrestle yet, those will be our fans. And I'm literally just buying everything that we have here. Like, I just bought the diamond plated flooring and black carpet. And Cody's like, why are you spinning? I bought all the spinning headlights. And I'm like, dude, I want to be able to let them do their own thing. But also, like, it's always been my dream to, like, have. Granted, Cody's like, you have that now with AEW. What are you doing? You know? And I'm like, well, it's not just for me. It's for them, you know? Mm-hmm. And but that was really cool. And I was glad that we were able to, you know, kind of come through in the clutch, right? Like, it's just like, dude, like, what would we have done?
Right.
And the idea that it was like this school that literally was, I sold my house in Florida, I bought a ring, you know, because by the time I paid taxes, paid my grandparents back, I had like no money off selling the house, you know, and to just buy a nice ring and a banner in a warehouse, to meeting the owner of the facility and through Glacier, who's my business partner, and doing all this stuff. And, you know, then seeing that, you know, it's just like, oh, this is so cool.
So, but what you're saying, though, is they had been preparing for that.
Yeah, they kind of, as an option, it was like us, ECW Arena. There was a couple different places. And in my head, I'm thinking, like, and I never pushed for my place because, you know, I didn't want, of course, it's wrestling. So even like Harrington one day was like, so what do you get out of it? I was like, nothing. And yeah. I didn't either. Yeah. Like, they paid a lot of money for the school. I probably like 5-10 grand per day or whatever it was. And I remember thinking, like, the owner better, like, turn around and not make me pay rent or something.
Yeah.
But we never even discussed it. And I just continued to pay. And I've never said anything. But, like, just because, like, he did tell me that he wants me to have my own locker in his office, you know, like a memorabilia locker. And he does want to create something on the wall that shows, like, the night Dynamite was filmed with, like, pictures and stuff, which I thought was pretty cool. He wants, like, a pair of boots. So
you never actually wrestled on any of those shows? That's hilarious.
Just the live one.
Because Tony and I, like I mentioned, that's how I started becoming a commentator.
Yeah.
Was because I was supposed to anyways, and no one else was available.
Yep.
So we called, I think, 26 matches. Yeah.
The only thing I did that whole time was I came out in Dustin versus Lance Archer, and I was going to throw the towel.
Oh, gotcha.
That was it, though. And that was like pulling teeth. And like, I remember talking to Cody about it, and I was like, then I won't do anything. I got real mad. Here I am, like this. Now I became this egotistical, like, what is it? Well, I won't do anything.
It's funny,
man,
though, because we only literally had, I think Tony had like said like 29% of the roster or something. Yeah, like that. So that must have made you feel real good, too.
I was like, he's like, oh, we'll just use this guy. And I'm like,
what about me?
What about me? And he's like, but in his defense, he's like, I need you at the table next to me. Like, I need you to
run the show.
I coach every match. So it was like,
well, okay, so hold on a second. So that's probably one of the reasons why is because you're coaching him, because we didn't have any coaches 100%, either.
Yeah. 100%. It wasn't a slight on my wrestling, but it was just the idea that, because, like, and then Dustin was going into this singles angle, and I'm just like, why'd they debut us then?
Sit here, run the show. And before we get back to QT Marshall, I want to remind you about my Painmaker apparel wear, the line of clothing that was influenced by my time and tours of Japan. Go to painmaker.store. If you've been following me on my Instagram, Chris Jericho Fozzy, you'll see all the AEW superstars who are wearing this, Christopher Daniels and Shida and Anna Jay and Sammy Guevara. I'm going to keep posting every single day because I've got, about 20 or 30 of the roster is getting into this. Painmaker.store. Go look and choose the design you want. It's perfect for Christmas. And also Jericho30.com to pre-order the complete list of Jericho. That's the book, my fifth book that we're currently getting ready to publish as soon as publishing starts again. You can pre-order it now. If you do, you'll get a 90-minute audio breakdown of some of the matches that you guys chose. Every single match I've ever had in my career is included. Rare pictures, top 10 lists, comments from some of the biggest superstars in pro wrestling about my career. Go to Jericho30.com and pre-order that now. And don't forget littlebitofthebubbly.com to get the new version, the update, the V2 version of A Little Bit of the Bubbly ready for your Christmas enjoyment. That's littlebitofthebubbly.com. Go check it out now. One of the things that was interesting to me, and probably one of the reasons why I got signed, was talking about Dr. Luther with Lenny.
Sure.
To bring it. Oh, Tony's the voice of God has just come on here. So we're talking about how one of the reasons why Len was hired was to kind of work with you guys down at the school. And I don't know if this is still one of the ideas, but something that Len had mentioned, you want to do eventually, you do run some shows that are kind of a territory out of there.
Yeah, so we have everything. I mean, we have a ring truck. I have four rings. I have a show ring. I have like a 16, an 18, a 20-footer, entranceways, music. I actually bought one of the promotions I used to work for because the guy wanted out. And like, I didn't like not tell him, but I told a buddy of mine, I was like, hey, you should buy this. I'll give you the money. Like, you buy it, but I'll just do everything, you know? I'll pay for everything. I'll buy the ring, all this stuff. But then obviously with the pandemic, but in my mind right now, we're going to do eventually the same building every like first weekend of the month. On Saturday, we'll do this week, this area, and we'll just keep going back every month. Mm. And the idea is like, if someone already runs that building, which they will have people that already run that building, because Georgia's not like a crazy indie place, is like, no problem. We'll showcase your champion or something. Like, and if you don't want to do it, okay, then we'll just do a meet and greet with Cody, like on our show, and then good luck running next month. Like, it's very terrible to say that, but no. Like, I want our guys to be able to wrestle all the time, because I hate when they come here and they don't get a job. It is what it is. And I'm never going to push for them. So like, that's just something I won't do. But I want them to come here and do extra work and have a match where Tony's like, dude, that's great. Like Lee Johnson, man, we got to sign that guy. Mm. Great. That made me feel great. But when they come here, they do a match and then nothing happens. It's like, well, that's because you need experience. Like, unfortunately, you've had four matches, dude. Like, you and your fifth match shouldn't be AEW. Like, your fifth match should be in, you know, Canton, Georgia in front of 19 people. Like, it is what it
is. That's how it works. Yeah.
That's how
it works. And there's people here under contract that would benefit from working in Canton, Georgia, which might raise it from 19 people to 119
people. Yes. And that was the other thing is like, well, if we could figure out a system where, you know, maybe the guy flies from TV, they train Thursday at the school, then Friday they go to the DDP studio and film a vignette or something, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. Then Saturday they do the show, or they do a meet and greet at the show, or whatever it is. Like, we can all benefit, right? And, you know, and I obviously legally, like, I don't think I'm supposed to have a wrestling company, and I'm pretty sure that goes against the rules. So, but that's why, like, Glacier running the school and all that other stuff.
Well, if it almost becomes a feeder system, which is kind of what I understand it to be.
Yeah.
Then it's good. It's like our own version of the performance center.
That's the thing. If it's not something selfishly where I'm trying to just make money, because I'm not. At the end of the day, if anything, I'm trying to spend money now. Like, to, you know. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like that. But that's what I want. I want them to be able to wrestle all the time, you know, because that's the only way you're going to get good. It's the only way, you know. Like, I don't know. It's just one of those things. But we can't. So anyway, with Lenny, I told him about it. He was doing something like that in Portland anyway.
Yeah.
I was like, well, if you like that over there, like, you'll love it here. Like, this is like, the thing is right now he's still new, so he doesn't want to step on. And I keep telling him, dude, just get in there, whatever you want to do. Like,
yeah, that's his personality too. Yeah,
you're gonna bring a different set style of coaching. So I'll never say, like, and not only that, like, wrestling is subjective. So, you know, and I even tell all my guys and girls, like, it's flavors of ice cream, man. And if Lenny's the boss at the time, do what he likes. Mm-hmm. If he's not, you know what I mean? And he's telling you something, like, he's telling you for a reason. He's not just telling you to, you know, pop himself. Like, he's doing it because he knows this is what works. And I would never, also the other thing is, I've had a multitude of people try to ask me to come coach at the school. I'm not going to let some random person come in. You know what I mean? So, like, the idea that, because I didn't really know much. I never watched anything but WWF growing
course,
up. So, like, but after talking to you and then talking to Lenny, is like, okay, at the end of the day, as long as he's a nice guy and he knows what he's talking about, that's all. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so we spoke about it, and he's just getting settled now. But I think once the world does open back up, you know, it'll It'll be really good. Mm-hmm. I think so. It has to be. You know?
Who are some of the students that you have that signed here? You mentioned Lee Johnson.
So Lee Johnson, all of my students turned into the Dark Order. No, Preston Vance 10, Allen Angels 5, Anna Jay. Those are the three.
Right.
And then Lee Johnson was the other one that during the pandemic all got jobs out.
It's amazing to me how good Anna is for such a short period
Unreal.
Of time.
And that was she's actually, so Glacier's best friends, that's his niece.
Oh.
And he was like, I got this girl. I don't know how serious she's going to take it because she's beautiful. And I was like, okay, let me see. And then she came to the school and I was like, oh, man. Yeah, like, I've dealt with girls like this at the Monster Factory. Like, she's not going to last.
Right.
And then, like, right away she got hurt. She needed shoulder surgery. Like, and she stuck through it. And then during that show at the school, she had done a match with Penelope that kind of was like, it was okay. And it was only like her sixth match.
Yeah.
So, like, and then Cody, we were at his house. He's like, what if we do, you know, maybe Anna Jay versus Sheeta? Because we didn't have any talent.
Yep.
And I was like, oh, dude, like, I'm not going to lie. I don't know about putting her on live TV, man. Like, this is her set. And she did great. And it was, and she had such a great response from the audience. And it was just like, they came right out to me like, hey, we want to sign her. And I was like, okay, well, if she doesn't do well, she's not my trainee. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Of course, I don't want to ever take away a job from anybody. But at the same time, like, just know what you're buying, too, is like, she's
that's
had
natural,
seven
though.
Matches.
Yeah, that's what I'm, my point
you know?
Is.
Yeah, and she's well, because she was a performer before doing the recitals and whatever it was that she was doing, you know, she's got it. I don't know whatever. I used to say it was just an excuse for hiring bodybuilders that didn't know how to wrestle. That was always like the indie wrestler. Like, you don't even know what it is, okay? Because Shawn Michaels didn't have it in the 80s, you know? Anna Jay has it,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So I don't have it.
Just as we start to wind down, who's in the school? How many students do you have in the school now?
So the camp we do with Cody and I, there's 22.
Wow.
And that's a 12-week camp. But then once we get done with that class, I have a night class, which is like before we started this camp system, where we call them like the lifers. And they're the more experienced. They're the ones that I would use for the shows that we use for AEW if they need extras and stuff. And so there's probably about like 40 maybe total. I mean, it's absurd.
Yeah.
Like when Cody first got there was like six. And now there's 40 people. And he says it's like a birthday party. Like everyone's just having fun. But they work hard, and I also, like, I let them know what is expected. And then when they ask me, so now they never ask me if they can get booked because they already know what I'm, did you get your new gear? Does it look TV ready? Does this, that? Because I never want to say no, so I just set the expectations so high.
As it should be.
As it should be.
This
like,
is
hey,
national fucking TV.
Right.
And Dark is national TV, too, with 500,000 people watching.
And this took me 16 years to get here. Like, I'm sorry. I'm not just going to hand you something.
Yeah.
Like, and I know that's terrible to hear, but.
It's not,
at the end of the day, you can give me all the money in the world. I'm not going to risk my job.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it is what it is.
Or your
is.
Reputation. Like
and
you
my
mentioned.
Reputation,
like you
right.
said, the most important thing is having the respect of your peers.
Yeah.
So if there's a guy like for example, Anthony Gogo.
He's one of mine. Oops.
No, it's okay. But there's a couple because I know that Sadie was going to move here. And they would come, and the idea would be people that need more experience would come to your school and then train with you when they're not here at TV.
Yep.
Yeah.
So – Anthony, it was Anthony, Sadie, now Jade.
So
there's a couple. And, you know, I just really focus on them. Like now we do like a AEW class too, where it's only like the people that are in. Because if they get hurt, I'd rather them hurt each other. Mm-hmm. I can't explain to Tony like, oh, you know, John X broke Jade's leg.
Right.
Like who's John X and what is he doing, you know?
Yeah.
And then he found out he had one match, you know? So, but I get in the ring and I wrestle them all the time. Like, Anthony Ogogo and I had a 15-minute match on the fly a couple weeks ago, and it was just like, how you learn, man.
Yeah,
it's the only way, and mess up. And plus, I know I can control how many times you're going to drop me and, you know, this, that, and the other. But it's fun. Like, I go to the school. Like, my wife hates it because I'm there all the time. I just enjoy it. It's fun for me. And also, I'm at the age now, which is – I'm only 35, but I'm 35 where, like, if I don't wrestle for a while and then I bump, I feel it. Whereas, like, if I'm just doing it all the time, I'm okay.
Right.
So it's just
helps you stay in shape.
Sort of, yeah. As right, you know, right, this right. shape at least. Yeah. But I just hired a bodybuilding coach, and I always say this, but now, and my wife's a nutritionist, so the idea that I went out and hired someone else wasn't a fun topic at home. But at the end of the day, like, I'm not held accountable to her because she's my wife. She's not going to get mad at me, and you know, she's just going to still love me because that's what we do. And like, But now this guy hopefully is going to be like, dude, what the hell? Why'd you eat that? You need to eat this.
And right.
I really want to take it seriously because, like, I am realizing, like, my confidence has gotten a lot better. Let's put it that way. And I've been having these matches, even if they're on dark, like, where people are like, oh, man, QT's actually – someone wrote it the other day, like, man, QT, like, everything he does is pretty good. And I wanted to say, like, oh, you spelled being a professional wrestler wrong.
Right.
I'm just professional.
But you have that. Like, Luther has it to an extent, and Nakazawa has it, even Brandon Cutler, because you're friends with one of the top guys.
Yeah.
And you almost have to work harder to prove that. That's what I like to see, like – Luther's actually pretty good, or QT actually does. Like, yeah, that's why you're here. You're not here on a friendship plan.
Right.
You're here because you do a lot of work and you deserve to be here.
The friendship plan gets you in the door.
Yes.
It gives you a look.
Yes.
But, like, you still have to produce every time.
That's right.
And that's why, like, I always say, like, in the one time I got to cut a promo for, like, the pay-per-view match and All Out, and I said that, like, name a time where I've gone up to the plate and struck out, dude. Like, I'm not trying to sound, like, arrogant, but I don't this is the only thing I'm good at in my life. Like, let me have this. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, don't take this away from
me. Right.
I really study it. It's all I do is watch wrestling. Like, I really try to pay attention. I see what gets over, what doesn't get over, and I try. Yes, I'm not the greatest, most exciting babyface. I'm not a babyface human being. It is what it is. Like, I enjoy, you know.
Who's your favorite wrestlers of all time that you, like, you study wrestling?
So, Shawn Michaels, definitely.
Mm-hmm.
The Rock is one of my favorites. And then I have, like, right under those two, I have, like, my other five. And it's, like, you, Triple H, Randy Orton, Razor Ramon is a big one for me.
Great.
And then Macho Man. Those are,
that's
like,
a pretty good list.
Yeah.
That's a
pretty good list. And I try to steal a little bit from everybody.
But that's what a professional does.
That's the way I was taught. Nowadays, I think it's different because every time I ask people, like, well, who do you want to be? It's like, I want to be Vegeta from Dragon Ball Z. And I'm like, what? Don't you want to be a wrestler? Like,
you can't
be in, you know, or I'm an alien, like Chris Statlander. Like, you're not a real alien. Yeah, like,
you know you're not an alien.
Right. Just pick a wrestler that, you know. So, yeah.
What's your last question? What's your favorite match that you ever had?
Well, last week would be it. But before that, I had one with. In Ring of Honor with Roderick Strong that was not meant to be good. Mm. And it was really good. And we got into, like, a huge argument. And here's why. Someone was ribbing me because I was, like, the non-Ring of Honor wrestler, like, the style. Hey, you should do the People's Elbow. I was like, okay. Like, I'll do it in a heartbeat. Are you kidding me? So then Roderick was like, and why don't you miss it? And I was like, okay, but instead of missing it, because the finish is your Walls of Jericho.
Mm-hmm.
Why don't you just pick my leg in midair and then get me in it and I'll get to the ropes or I'll kick off and then I'll close on you or something. Nah, that doesn't work. Of course it'll work. Like, it definitely works.
I used to do this with The Rock all the time.
So he goes, no, it's not going to work, dude. And I was like, it worked with Chris Jericho and The Rock all the time. Like, did you watch wrestling? Which is why I had a bad reputation because it definitely worked. I plagiarized everything. Yeah. Like, that's what you're supposed to do. Like, make it your own. So instead I end up missing this People's Elbow, which as soon as I kicked his arm and took the elbow, crazy booze. I missed the People's Elbow. He ends up schoolboying me, and then I give him, like, a back elbow. And it was just so, like, non.
Yeah.
It was the only part of the match I didn't like. But I was just like, dude, let me have. I'm telling you, this works.
And it's so obvious.
It's the finish. Like, they did it all the time, all of 2001.
That's,
you know?
Right. And the other one that I did all the time is when Hogan went for the leg drop.
It's like, why don't you just, don't have to recreate anything. Like, just watch what they do.
Next time I see Roderick, I'll have to tell him, dude, you were wrong.
Yeah, tell him, yeah. Yeah, he probably doesn't even remember the match. I remember because it was like when I knew, like, man, maybe I should just shut my mouth, especially because he chops really hard. And I don't like to chop. So, like, yeah, he was just – and then I never chopped him back the whole match. And when I came in the back, even Delirious was like, I'm surprised you never chopped him back. I was like, I just don't like it, man. Like,
I'll take it.
I'll take him all the time, but it hurts my hand, you know. I like pro wrestling, you know.
Well, good job, dude. See, you did it great.
Yeah,
I made it. First important podcast. You made it through. Thanks, man.
Of course. Thank you.